Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude!
Hey!
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy. Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude!
O-line U, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah!
Another dude in the house!
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude. Season 2, Week 2. Chestnut Hill was the site of the Boston TD party this weekend, as the Eagles hung 48 points on the Minutemen in the first half, en route to their first victory of the year. It was one if by Land and two if by Anthony Brown, as BC dominated in all phases of the game. As Paul Revere would say, the Eagles are coming this season. On today's episode, we'll recap the blowout, break down a busy opening weekend in college football, and say a prayer for Holy Cross next Saturday. Matt, take it away.
Matt, what a way to kick off the year. That was really a lot of fun. On all sides of the ball all afternoon. Just an overall perfect performance from the Eagles, exactly what I think we all would have drawn up if we could have had an ideal situation. We got out of it relatively injury-free. Everyone looked good. We got the backups, plenty of reps. And it was great weather, by the way, which we all know is a big concern over at 4th and Dude. So overall, just a fantastic day.
I'll tell you, you never know what's going to happen game one, right? As we saw with Penn State and Appalachian State, anything can happen game one. UMass, a lot of people were talking up UMass this year. Coach Adazio was saying it's the best UMass squad he's ever seen, which I think he says about every team every single year.
He's very quick to give praise. Yeah, I would agree with that.
By the way, it works. I mean, he scares me when he says that. I think,
fair.
You know, he does that and then it's like, wow, we beat the best UMass team ever. Everyone gets really happy about it. He's a genius. But anyway,
add it to his resume.
48-7 at halftime. That's really the headline here. BC officially has a passing game to complement AJ Dillon, which is the ginormous question mark coming into the year. Anthony Brown looked incredible. He did have a little rust on maybe the first two or three throws of the game, and then after that he threw some pretty perfectly placed balls to Kobe White, as well as the tight ends, and surprise, surprise, AJ Dillon can catch the ball out of the backfield. So, you know, those first few drives of the game were great to see. It's, you know, a lot of the questions we had coming into this season was, you know, can Anthony Brown make the jump? Can AJ Dillon catch? How good is the offensive line? And I think a lot of these were answered. Well, I'll say answered for now, right? It is UMass.
Yeah, it's still UMass, yeah.
But pretty perfect afternoon, I think, for game one of the season here.
Yeah, if A.J. Dillon can catch, and clearly he looked like he could on Saturday, that is very bad news for the ACC and for all other Heisman candidates out there. We'll get into it a little bit. I think you're probably going to wish he had a couple more touchdowns, but overall him getting that one touchdown on a great pass, his first ever reception, which is a really weird and
wild statistic.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, otherwise, like you said, I mean, Brown looked phenomenal for my money. And again, coming back on a relatively short turnaround off an ACL, a few small misses, like you said, but really nothing major. And he didn't need to, you know, make any. There were no instances where any minor mistakes would hurt him. Again, the factor of playing UMass. But overall, 279 for four touchdowns in his first game back in. You know, he's only been going full speed for a couple weeks here. Pretty much a dream start.
Adazio said something. I don't know how true it is. He said Anthony hadn't taken a single hit in practice yet, which I don't know.
And he mentioned that. Anthony mentioned that. There's a press conference that BC tweeted earlier today, and they mentioned the same thing. They were like, oh, yeah, how's it feel to get hit again? And he's like, well, you know, I've only been hit once, and that's really it for the last, like, 9 months. So, yeah, he got hit once on Saturday, and that was the extent of it. So I guess we'll see what happens. But fortunately, we don't have any big bruisers coming to town until Clemson.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, fortunately, it was UMass, and it's not a factor. But I have to imagine that you know, let the guy get a little dirty before game one. But in Daz, yeah, we trust. That's what they say, right?
That's definitely what they say. On the, I guess the hitting note, big victory is that we came out relatively injury free. Baker went down a little bit, but it sounds like he's fine there, according to Daz's Monday press conference. So that's good news. And then I think a long snapper went out, and then we missed that snap later on. But
yeah,
that's,
right.
I'll worry about that later on. If AJ and Tony are healthy, that's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. And just a quick note on Baker too. I mean, arguably the line was even better without him last year. I don't want to say that because obviously he's very important to this team and all that.
You can't say that to our captain. Yeah,
I know that. But I'm just saying we have so much depth there and so much talent. That's not a we are prepared to have injuries on the offensive line. So
yeah, if there's a spot to have it, it's no question on the O line. Again, if we lose Dylan, if we lose touchdowns, if we lose, I mean, heck, you know, our tight ends or our receivers, we're in major trouble. Same goes for D line. O line, we can afford to lose a little bit. Get the Lindstrom brothers together. It's always nice. I feel like when sports teams have a brother and brother combo, I feel like that works out well.
It's an X factor because you got the mental telepathy. Is that how you pronounce
that?
That?
Yeah, I think that works.
Yeah, I think I nailed that. So AJ, let's just move through this quickly because it's UMass.
It is UMass. So
AJ had a had 98 yards rushing, two catches for 27 yards and a touchdown. It was kind of a quiet game for him, but you could just tell. You know, he was cranking out 6 to 8 yards carries every single time. Just dragging defenders for, you know, after contact. So he looks like he's in midseason form there. I mean, not that that was ever a question, but it's just good to know that AJ, you know, hasn't lost a step, obviously.
And that was one of my favorite parts of the game too. If you watched, like, you noticed it when UMass would make a stop on first or second down and they stopped him for like 5 yards, like they were psyched as a team. Like they were excited when they only gave up 5 yards on first down, which shows obviously the caliber of running back he is, but also what UMass expected. Yeah, I mean, he didn't break out. I think everyone at the game watch was kind of waiting for that 50-yard touchdown run that he's, you know, known for. But he didn't need that, and that's completely fine. Oftentimes, by the way, those come in the second half after he wears teams down, and he
exactly.
Obviously didn't have the opportunity to do so. So, yeah, I no harm, no foul for me on that one.
Matt, that was literally written down on my sheet there. I was going to make that point, but you beat
Sorry.
Me to it. Good work.
Sorry about that.
Not much else to report defensively. You know, other than that first or second drive, I think it was, where one of our cornerbacks got burned on the double move.
He was trying to get on SportsCenter. So he was trying to make a pick six, basically,
yeah.
on the first play from scrimmage.
Well, you know, that's what Lucas Dennis is teaching him, right?
You want to jump
that route,
big swinging,
you take
absolutely.
It to the house. But no, that, I mean, that receiver is actually pretty legit. Like he's getting, NFL, he'll probably be like a 7th round draft pick by the Pats. But he's a legit receiver, you know, as far as, you know, at least as far as UMass is concerned. Right. So, other than that, they settled down, nothing to complain about on the defensive side, couple of garbage time touchdowns. Outside of that, I mean, it was kind of business as usual. Special teams, right. Was 7 for 7 extra points. So that's good. A couple snafus there. They had a bad snap that hit Jeff Smith right in the face. Which is a pretty funny highlight. Punting was kind of eh. You know, I think they averaged 34 yards, but again, it's UMass. Who really cares? Probably isn't a good depiction of what reality is going to be.
Right.
But this is what we do, game one, right? We read
yep.
way too much into everything. They had the kickoff out of bounds. So if I had one nitpick to make, it would be, you know, just shoring up the special teams a little bit. But that's what preseason games are for here, Matt. So.
Yeah, and by the way, I'll take 7 for 7 on the extra points. I think last year we were pretty strong on the extra points, but like we're also conditioned as BC fans to just expect the worst.
7 for 8 if you include the bad snap, but yes.
Okay, fair. That's a fair point. But overall, I will take that. Last year, Colton was pretty strong on that side of things as well. So good to see more of the same. Obviously, we didn't see him kick from anything outside of, you know, whatever, 17 yards. But otherwise, all good. Only other note I have on this game is this was made more enjoyable over this past week thanks to UMass Twitter, of all people. I didn't expect them to have... Am I spoiling something here?
Yeah, it's my dude of the week, Matt.
Okay, all right.
My dude this week.
I'll hold off then. I'll let you get to that. But yeah, I think we wrapped it up nicely. Overall, this was just a dominant, I won't say better than expected, but as good as we could have expected start. We did turn heads in the ACC, and as we'll get to in a little bit as well, that was a hard thing to come by this week, was turning heads in the ACC, because everyone else stunk. So nice.
We're starting to. I mean, obviously, the AP poll just came out.
Yeah.
More on that later. But I was watching whatever it was on Saturday, the college football roundup, whatever, with Jesse Palmer and Joey Galloway. And, you know, they showed some BC high. Well, they showed one BC highlight, and it was the extra point where the ball went off Jeff Smith's
face.
It
that's,
was like,
that's
yeah,
the one they took?
It was like, exactly. It was, so,
oh,
I mean,
my God.
It was like their version of Come On, Man. I think they call it, like, What Were You Thinking? Which, I don't know. That happens. We've all been there. But I tell you, the disrespect train continues for Boston College.
Wait, that's amazing. I did not.
Yeah,
that's brutal.
It was. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And, but no, that is what it is. I mean, it's football in the Northeast.
I thought the public perception had been turning around, especially on the ESPN front. So that's disheartening to say the least. But sure, whatever. I mean, if we can sneak up on people, all the better.
In their defense, it was a laugh out loud funny play if you watch it in slow motion. Anyway, but yeah, that's UMass. I mean, we couldn't have hoped for anything better. And I guess, again, I mean, the takeaway here is that, you know, it was a pretty solid UMass team, we think. And BC has never embarrassed a, I don't want to say good opponent, but somewhat legitimate opponent like that ever. That's a non-FCS school, I guess I'll say. So it's a really
Florida
good sign
State,
that
35-3.
No, that's a good point.
Good point.
A good point, but 48-7 at halftime is pretty damn convincing. So looking forward to the rest of the season here, based on how that first game went.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I think with that, let's get into our usual segments. Again, just a reminder, I know it's a little confusing, and I know we have some new listeners. So we have Dude of the Week, and then we have Dude or Pood, and then we have a couple other kind of tough dude puns that we make work. They don't always make a lot of sense, but we go with it. What do you want to start with this week?
Let's do Dude or Pood first.
Okay, awesome. I've got a couple here. I don't know about you or how you like. I know you like to go Pood first normally.
Yeah, I'm going to go Pood first.
Okay. And, yeah, why don't you get it started?
Yeah, you touched on it earlier, Matt. And I don't know how serious I am, so I'll say that. But I am. I think I am a little serious. A.J. Dillon, one touchdown. Absolutely got Vultured City by Davon Jones, right? And even David Bailey. I don't know.
Bailey got one, but I think that was with the twos. I think
that
was just
later,
Davon
right?
Jones. Yeah, yeah.
Irregardless, Matt. Can we just get him a couple touchdowns? Just he got the ball to the one, and then we put in Davon Jones. It's extremely difficult. We're trying to win a Heisman, right? We're trying to win a Heisman that hasn't been done at BC in a really long time. It's very difficult for a running back that isn't in the national championship conversation to win the Heisman. Not saying that we won't be in the national championship conversation.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, right? Let's worry about that first.
But in general, a running back wins it, I don't know, once out of every 7 years or so. Reggie Bush won it. Mark Ingram won it. Is that his name?
It is,
right?
Okay. Yep, good job.
I was thinking Brandon. That's a basketball player. Yeah. The last time someone won it that wasn't in the national championship, I did some research, Matt. Ricky Williams, right? Back in 98. You could say Ron Dane, but they had a really good year. I think they were in the Rose Bowl. But Ricky Williams was on a kind of a mediocre Texas squad. They were like 8-4, 9-3. His first game against New Mexico State, he had 215 yards and 6 touchdowns. So I'm just saying, AJ's trying to get a Heisman. Why can't we just give him the ball in the one, rack him up a couple touchdowns? Because, and people said, it doesn't matter how many touchdowns you get against UMass. It matters how many you get against Miami and Clemson. Well, I don't know. Ricky Williams finished the year with 30 touchdowns when he won the Heisman. I think that's a pretty convincing way to do it. So, I don't know. I was disappointed, but if that's the one thing I'm going to get mad about, then we'll take it.
Okay, well, so again, to your point, you can also win it, you know, if you have 30 touchdowns, but also if you're on a national championship team. If A.J. Dillon goes down because he's trying to force a run and there's a big pig pile on the 1 yard line and he, you know, tears an ACL, God forbid, and is out for the year, we're not winning the national championship.
But
we're not winning
the ACC championship. Let's keep him on the bench. Let's keep him on the bench, Matt. That's fine.
No, but we don't need to put him into situations where, you know, a linebacker and Davon Jones can do the job just as well. That actually segues very nicely into my Pood of the Week, so I appreciate it. But I really didn't have much negative on the team this week, obviously. So it will be the fans who still found so much to be negative about is my Pood. So specifically, the note that I have here is the people who were mad about not giving AJ the touchdowns, the people who are mad about pulling the starters. On the Rivals message board, there were definitely a couple folks, the kind of usual three or four suspects who just will never be happy until Steve Adazio leaves Boston College forever and Alumni Field burns to the ground. There's a group of fans who are just never going to be happy unless they lose, but that's kind of a catch-22 because I feel like if you lose, you're not happy. I don't get it. I don't get where their mindset comes from. So that was really my main Pood for this week. It's kind of, I guess, a Pood of the people within a Pood. So a little confusing there, but they were very annoying. And then again, I will
so wait,
say that
I'm in your Pood.
Well, technically,
just
I guess if you were serious with your you know, with your commentary there. But my other poot as well, which is not serious, is that we have a Heisman controversy on the Heights with Davon Jones, but we actually might have one with Tony Touchdowns. The guy was unreal. Like, I just want to say that much. Davon Jones is not one of the Heisman. I know there was jokes about that. Tony Touchdowns, that was a Heisman. That was how you start a Heisman campaign. Let's put it that way.
If you're bringing up Tony, is Coby White in the discussion as well? He looked like Calvin Johnson out there, Matt.
He looked phenomenal. Yeah, catches. Fine. Put him on the list as well. He's in the top five right now.
Can you imagine that on an all-BC Heisman ceremony?
I think there's a serious chance that that's going to happen, so I don't want to joke about it yet. Zach Allen will be the defensive
throw Zach Allen in. Maybe yep. A Lindstrom brother. Who knows?
Well, Lucas Dennis, he's going to have, at this point, right. he's on pace for 15 pick sixes. Like, that's pretty good. I like our chances.
All right, I will get to my pood now. That was my pood, so I'll get to my dude now. And you touched on it, the UMass fans, right? They did a lot of shit talking after beating embarrassing Duquesne squad by like 50 points. And I think they learned the hard way that BC is not Duquesne. I don't know. I was kind of searching around. I'm kind of doing this new thing where I think we should try to pick fights with the opponents. I don't think I'm going to do this with Holy
like
Cross because that's kind of mean and that's just not even worth doing. But I'm going to try to pick a fight, I think, via Twitter every game this year. So I did some research via the UMass Twitter, and they were coming up with all these conspiracy theories about why their big point of contention was why the UMass BC game wasn't on TV in the Boston area, which I'll admit is kind of bizarre. But
could be by the way, that could be a little mini pood too, is the fact that it wasn't on TV, but not
I mean,
a big deal. But
who can't stream it? I mean, if you have an Xbox, if you have an internet, if you have anything, like you can stream, watch, and it's really high quality.
There's an argument to be made that this is probably the year more so than ever that we can get casual fans, you know, casual local Boston fans onto the bandwagon. And again, unless you're a BC or a UMass fan, you weren't going out of your way to watch this game. But if it's on NESN and you're flipping around on a Saturday afternoon, because I don't think many of the early games were great, why not land on that and say, wow, this is actually a phenomenal offense that happens to be a 10-minute drive away. Let's roll with it.
I think
mini pood. Again, if I'm nitpicking, I'm nitpicking.
A fraction of a population, and it's very old people probably that can't figure out how an internet stream works, that aren't interested enough to go to the game or care at all. So anyway, that was kind of they used that against us, saying the ACC doesn't give a shit about BC. They're embarrassed by them. They think that we're going to be too much competition. It's going to make the conference look bad, just everything you could think of. And so as I was laughing out loud, I tried to, you know, pick a quick fight, saying, you know, all these guys are getting worked up about a preseason game. This is ridiculous. And then someone fired back. And the next thing I knew, you took over, Matt, and you
came over the top.
You kind of went viral, and yep. you laid out all the reasons, everything that BC's done for the ACC since we joined. It's a great tweet. But anyway, it was great that BC, because I don't know, we talked some shit, but you never know how they're going to back it up. And BC obviously played a pretty flawless game. So it was that was my dude this week, having, you know, putting out some stuff on there, going out on a limb, and having the boys back it up for us.
Yeah, I really did not know that UMass had a Twitter mob the way they did. That was it was pretty impressive. I mean, it was only
a few
like,
people, but they're loud.
It was a very loud 10 people. I'll say that much. So yeah, I mean, I guess credit to them, and good luck the rest of the way against Howard and one of their other, you know, FCS teams you guys play every Saturday, and we'll worry about the big time football. So my dude two is, you know, two of them. The first is basically everything that happened on the field. Again, no negatives like we covered. My second one is a shout out to the students. I think they did a really good job in the student section. The general attendance in the stadium did not look great, but any shots of the student section you saw, especially in the first half, it was completely packed. I know we usually get a pretty good turnout game one because it's just kind of like what you do, but you never know on a you know, nice Labor Day afternoon if people have other things going on. So I was proud of them to support the team. I think they're always the backbone of good home attendance and home atmosphere. So that was great to see. A mini pood within the dude.
Remember our first game, by the way?
Yeah, 59
our first
to nothing,
game on
Northeastern.
The ice. Yeah, yep. 54 to nothing, right? Northeastern?
Yeah, it was Northeastern.
And they canceled their football program like the next day.
That's what Montel Harris will do to you.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, and then also, just a little mini pood within the dude. People were complaining about them leaving at halftime. I have no issue with that whatsoever. If you're 48-7, there's a lot of good things going on the Heights that we
you
all
shouldn't
know and
be
love
there.
That yeah, you got to go worry about it. I mean, even at the game watch at Dewey's, at halftime, people stopped, you know, paying full attention. They have a great beer pong set up there, as you well know. So that was kind of took over as the main point of attention throughout the
afternoon. I was watching from home. I left my house at halftime. I had nothing
to do if I was, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, again, this is a pretty clean Dude or Food. There's not much to be upset about on the Heights this week.
So I'm going to segue again here, Matt. So into Dude of the Week. Your boy Martin.
Don't call
Jarmond.
Him Martin.
I know. That's not all. And that
Martin.
Goes for everyone. There's a PSA.
That goes for everyone.
The entire BC community. Do not do it. We will kill you. We've got an email. Emails threatening us not to call him that. So
threatening makes it seem a little intimidating. Maybe we shouldn't say that. He just asked us politely, hey, I prefer Martin. So just let's call him Martin. But we'll threaten you. I'll kill you if you call
him
Martin.
Exactly. So I'll say Martin Jarmond / our boy, head of marketing, DJ Dirty D, are my official dudes of the week. There was a viral video, somewhat viral, I don't know, had probably 100 views, that had the BC student body or student section singing Mr. Brightside in the stands, which it's obviously a nice little song by the Killers that is just an absolute electric factory. The BC class of 2013, I believe, mostly our roommate who is also a DJ on the side, in addition to working for Fourth and Dude, in addition to law school and all that. I think he single-handedly, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, I think he single-handedly brought Mr. Brightside into the fold as an electric tailgate playlist song.
I think I might be correcting you if you're wrong. And that's not to say that I definitely know that he wasn't behind it, but I feel like that's a big statement that you're giving there. And I don't know. It would be a good story if that's the case, but I don't know if that's true.
He was the first I heard of it. So
okay, that's fair. That works.
I'm trying to throw him a bone. He was actually helpful on Twitter last week for the first time since we started this thing.
It's the first time he declined to get in Twitter fights with us? Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, DJ Dirty D was kind of the king of the mods. Our senior
What did Martin do there?
So I think he told the PA announcer, hey, the kids are really enjoying Mr. Brightside. Why don't you play that? And then they'll sing along.
Dude, the band's been playing that since we graduated.
All right, so maybe I'll just cancel this whole Dude of the Week.
Have a Dude of the Week. We beat UMass by 60 points, and you can't go up with a dude?
All right, my dude's Anthony Brown because he threw for 300 yards and a half.
Thank you.
I don't know what you want from me, Matt. My dudes of the week are Martin Jarmond for all the reasons you noted. We had a great turnout. He's making the game experience great. There's beer lines everywhere. And I'm throwing our former roommate a bone here because he repopularized the Killers into mainstream media.
All right, we'll go with it. Did you hear anything? Did you have any contacts at the game this weekend and hear anything about the beer lines? The message boards seem to have mixed reactions about whether or not they actually were better.
I know nothing. No.
So they still, I know, do cans, which was a big concern or question.
Cans
that we
into
had.
Cups.
Cans into cups, which is just wild. I mean, I'm sure it's very expensive for them to outfit it with, you know, a full tap room and lines all over the place. But yeah, apparently it was still not the best. But again, game one, that was my bold prediction for the year, is that would become a good system. So I still have a lot of confidence on that side of things. Other quick poo that I forgot to mention, this is completely irrelevant to everything on the football field, but I heard a rumor that they recently got rid of late night.
That's a mini poo on my list too, Matt. Yeah. So I think they relocated late night and they are now putting it in Addies, which is a horrible idea for all sorts of reasons. No one wants like lettuce pizza at 2 a.m.
Oh, at Addies, yeah.
After a night at Chiswick or Braymore, whatever. And B, that's a lot of stairs. That's way too many stairs for a bunch of
drunk dangerous.
Kids.
That's dangerous.
C, why? What is the point? That was one of the... I'd say it's in the top 10 of BC thing. Reasons I went to BC was because they have such a great late night program.
Yeah, that was the highlight of reunion for me, at least, was the late night.
That was awesome,
so,
yeah. Yeah, great.
All right, so whatever. At least it's not all the way gone, but not ideal. I'll move on to Dude of the Week since I have a more legitimate one. So I have two. Again, and just to be clear, this is different than Dude or Pood. I don't really know how to explain how it's different than Dude or Pood, but I know it is. It's kind of more of a singular thing. Whatever, we're going to go with it. Two, my first is Dewey's, again, the Game Watch Bar in New York City. We talked about it a lot last year. Great place to watch a football game. They figured out the Wi-Fi this year for the games, which is huge. So last year, as we know, we had a lot of games that were streamed on, watch ESPN, ESPN3, whatever, and they would almost completely cut out and never get good quality. And it was really a
stressful
Saturday experience.
Double check the archives from last year. Double check the archives after we played, was it Central Michigan? What was the game they played in slow motion, Matt?
Yeah, so that might have been Central Michigan because it was early on ESPN. It was terrible.
It was incredible. They were streaming the game in slow motion, and it like wasn't an ESPN3 thing. It was like Dewey's can only play slow motion stream of the game, and it was wild. So it took him a full quarter and a half probably to get it right. So Matt, I'm psyched to hear that. I'm no longer in New York, so I'm not a Dewey's guy anymore. But it's great to hear that they figured things out. They're official. You know, we're getting big. You got to have, you know, a bar that can back it up now that we're going to become a top 25 program. So that's great to see.
Absolutely, yeah. So the picture was crystal clear. It was just as fast as anyone who had it, you know, pulled up on their phones just to test it. So yeah, they get definitely a Dude of the Week shout out. Excited to continue to go there throughout the season. My second one on you know, I think a more legitimate note, giving a shout out to AJ Dillon's mom. So there was a Bleacher Report article that came out this week that went again very viral in the college football world. It was basically just a full expose on AJ and kind of his background and what he's looking to do this year. They compared him to LeGarrette Blount. A ton of great things about BC and very
Leonard
well
deserved. They compared to Leonard Fournette, I think, Matt.
What did I say?
LeGarrette Blount.
Oh yeah, Leonard Fournette. That being compared to LeGarrette Blount, would that really move the needle?
No, probably not. No.
But anyways, so his mom specifically was, you know, a feature of the article. So for a lot of his life, raised him by herself. Worked multiple jobs. She was a teacher during the day, and then I think she was a waitress at night, but still found time to make sure he was doing his homework and grading his homework, and then more importantly, found the time to get him up every day at 5 in the morning to run wind sprints. So when he eventually wins this Heisman this year, I know everyone always, you know, thanks their mom and you know, God first. She will far and away be the most responsible for this Heisman, and it really won't even be close. So major shout out to her, and also shout out to that article. Again, it's just great to have positive press on the Heights again.
Yeah. 100%. AJ is obviously a stud. It's great that the story goes along with it. All right, let's jump to our next segment, Eagles in the Wild. Matt, I'll go first because we actually have our, this is a little anecdotal for us, but we have our fantasy football draft tonight in about 30 minutes. So we actually have to wrap this up before that. Matt Ryan, by the way, is criminally underrated in fantasy football this year. I don't understand why that's happening. People are saying, I guess the Kyle Shanahan effect. Matt is going to absolutely light the NFL on fire this year. He's gonna be a top five quarterback. Take it to the bank, book it. I'm gonna draft him probably in the fifth round. He's not going till like the 10th. That's one of my Eagles in the Wild. My second Eagle in the Wild, Matt, is, and I just shot out an electric tweet. I assume it's going viral right now, but it might not be. Hold on. Nope, just the one like still.
Just the one. All right. Like,
so apparently the Eagles golf team, which I can never figure out if it's actually a real team or it's club or if it's intramural, who knows? They have someone whose real name is Christian Cavalieri, who apparently shot a 64 the other day. And so as someone that's been, you know, a Laguna Beach guy for much of my life, as well as the Hills, and more recently, very Cavalieri, which all these are on MTV. Very Cavalieri is...
Was she on the Hills? Not to cut you off, but...
Yeah, so, and I don't want to get into this, but she was one of the enemies of LC on the Hills.
Of course. Of course.
So it was her, Heidi, and Elsie, and it was a whole thing. So, but anyway, so Very Cavalieri is actually one of the best shows on television right now. You get Kristen, who's married to Jay Cutler, who is just horrible, but horrible in like a good way. Like he just, it's the entire season's about she's starting up some shop, and he like comes in and just messes stuff up, and it's, man, I don't know if you watch it, but it's must watch television.
I can't say I do.
Opinion.
I'm too backed up on The Real Housewives. I don't have time for
So that's an Eagle in the Wild. I can't believe we have a real person named Christian Cavalieri. And we're getting to the age now where like that was a person when he was born probably, right? So I think his parents
probably
knew what they were doing.
I was trying to do math as well. I don't know if it's quite there yet, but either way, like he was like 2 years old and the parents must have just been like, well, come on. Like really? Like we're going to name Christian Cavalieri after him right away? So it's tough
timing. You got to go with a nickname, though. You can't be Christian Cavalieri your whole life.
Right, right. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Matt, I have a clean Eagles in the Wild this week. I have nothing. I've been too busy doing fantasy football draft prep all week. So
I'll give you one.
Ready for another third to last place season.
Noah Hanifin. I did a lot of homework this week. Noah
Hanifin, yeah. Big money. Big money.
He got paid. And I don't know what – we were probably, you know, well graduated by the time he was there. But I think he was pretty good, right? Drafted pretty high. Now he's making 30 mil for someone. So
not bad.
So that's your Eagles in the Wild.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
So our next segment is my personal favorite. And I think we're going to just hit on a few things here. But it's Duteus Corpus, which is where we take typically ACC or other teams on our schedule or anything that's happening in the college football world into the courtroom and decide whether they're guilty or not guilty or something else.
Mistrial, hung jury.
basically breaking down what happened over the weekend, trying to figure out if they're overrated, underrated, what's going to happen when BC plays them. So Matt, I can kick it off here. So a couple games that I was probably keying in on, and by the way, if you guys haven't listened to the season preview last week, do so. It's a good episode. We break down kind of game by game, how the Eagles are looking, position by position, etc. So, but anyway, so Purdue kicked the college football season off Thursday night against Northwestern. They ended up losing Northwestern. I don't know. I don't have much to say about that game, Matt. But did you see that the I don't even know what to call him. He's pretty much Sherm Alston 2.0, except like really, really good.
Yeah.
This guy Rondale Moore, who had he had a bunch of awesome catches, touchdowns, million yards. He's pretty much Sherm Alston 2.0, and I'm terrified of when we play him. So Purdue, I wasn't scared of at the beginning of the year, but now I am because they have him. They did end up losing the game, as I said. And their defense is horrible.
I kind of disagree with that take, to be honest. I think that, if anything, that game made me feel much better about our ability to go in there to get a win. Unfortunately, I do see our game shaking out in a, I guess, similar way. It will be, I think, kind of a shootout, much the way Northwestern was. But, I mean, Northwestern, I don't think is... I mean, they're a fine program, but I kind of put them on the same level as, like, a, I don't know, maybe an NC State or, like, a Wake Forest, kind of mid to low-tier ACC school. And they went in and... I don't want to say didn't have any problem, but was a relatively smooth sailing win. I think it only ended up being by, you know, one score, but I think it felt a little more convincing than that. So to be honest, that knocked my opinion of Purdue down a little bit. Again, you know, I was never terrified of that game, and I was also never thinking it would just be a cakewalk. I'm still kind of right in the middle, but yeah, to be honest, that one didn't do a lot to me. You also had a take on Thursday night, opening night as well, that the Wake game to Tulane actually somehow scared you more, you know, than it did not. And I, for that, think you're crazy. I don't know if we're bringing this into the courtroom or not yet, but the Wake performance against... Let's bring Wake in.
Matt, did you watch the game?
I watched the second half. I was on a double date at a comedy show, not to brag.
That's really hipster.
It was a good time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. So I watched the game. I was actually a committed Fourth and Dude podcaster here. The final score did not reflect the game itself. Wake's offense is way better than the 20 points or whatever they put up
against a low level FBS team.
Well, no one knows how good Tulane is, and I don't want to make this whole show about this, but okay. They have this backup quarterback, and everyone's saying Wake's going to be a joke this year because we're playing, you know, Kendall Hinton's out. They're playing. They have their backup guy in there who I think is a true freshman. He's literally John Walford 2.0. So we talked about Sherm Alston 2.0. This guy is Bobby Walford 2.0, who absolutely lit us up last year. And now I think he made the Jets. I don't know. I think he was trying out. But he had like 400 yards passing, another 100 yards rushing.
Receiver. How do those numbers then equate to only 17 points in regulation?
Yeah, they couldn't score in the red zone, but that's pretty variable. That's kind of random, Matt. So if they're putting up that kind of yardage, then they can score. So Wake is officially not as much of a slam dunk. And I know it's because they barely escaped Tulane. It's counterintuitive to any type of logic, but just saying, Wake kind of scares me.
Yeah, it seems like, and, again, as credit, I didn't really watch those games in full, but it seems like in general, Thursday night was a negative night for you in terms of the Boston College schedule and the rest of the way. And it could not have been more the opposite for me. I came in after seeing the scores and watching the highlights on Thursday night. I feel much better about what we're going to do in weeks 3 and 4. So I guess we'll see who
Matt, I was in the trenches watching the game. You caught the highlights, so we'll see what happens. I'm almost rooting for BC to lose against those guys. Just to prove you wrong.
That would be a good one for your mantle. What's next? I mean, we have the whole list here, and obviously we don't have to spend a ton of time on all of them. But
well, we should touch on the ACC real quick because it was a huge weekend for us, and not in a good way in a lot of ways. So
well, good way for BC, not a good way for the ACC.
Well, yeah, but that's one and the same, right? I mean, it's good for us having a good record, but maybe 10-2 doesn't get you in the national conversation anymore because the ACC, I'm making a, you know, obviously overreacting here to week one, but you had Louisville getting, you know, absolutely dominated by Alabama. You had Miami getting absolutely dominated by LSU. I know the score was closer than it looked, but they were down, I think, 33-3 at one point to a LSU team with a ton of question marks. What was last night? Florida State looked terrible.
Votek looked good.
But it was the storyline is FSU is bad. So
horrible.
So you look at
which, by the way, real quick, can I give a real quick credit to us? We were the ones who were on top of Miami being horrible and Florida State being horrible. It seems like the rest of the country just forgot, well, forgot about FSU last year, but also like didn't watch any of the Miami games last year. Every game we watched in Miami, they were terrible except for the one against, what, Notre Dame, I guess, I think was the one they looked good at. Every other challenge they had, or even not challenged, they looked pretty pathetic. And it seems like they're keeping them more of the same. So I'm glad they've been exposed. Again,
they have a four-game losing streak right now.
Yeah, exactly. And continuing on the, you know, kind of, I guess, my takeaway from Thursday night, with this, you know, with the game on Sunday night, I now feel a lot better about that game as well. So it just kind of continues the theme of me being more positive about the BC schedule with everything that we've seen this weekend.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, especially in the Coastal, I don't know how that's going to shape up now. If Miami is not the real deal, I think Virginia Tech looked really good. But again, it seems like the narrative is that Florida State is just really bad. So, and that's the thing with week one, you have nothing to compare anything to. So we'll see in the next few weeks what actually happens here. But as far as the Atlanta is concerned, it really has become Clemson. And someone, one of the Clemson bloggers tweeted it last night saying, wait a second, I think BC is, you know, by far the toughest game on our schedule. And they're right. I think it is going to be, you know, Clemson, and then it's whatever day it is, October 21st. That is the ACC Atlantic Championship, really the ACC Championship play-in game.
I don't think that's crazy to say.
If you completely over-extrapolate week one, that's where we're at.
Okay,
right,
maybe it is a little crazy to say, but sure.
So, I don't know. We'll see. It wasn't a great showing for the ACC, but I also think that you threw up some of our most overrated bad teams. Like if you threw up a Duke in there and, you know, they're going to surprise some people. You threw up a Louisville team that you knew was going to suck against, you know, Bama, right?
Yeah, that was not surprising, right?
You threw up FSU that has a ton of question marks, and you threw up Miami, who we all know is overrated. So it sucks that the ACC is now looked down upon already, but I don't know. Well, I'm sure we'll figure out who emerges and who the real deal is in the next few weeks here. One other thing, non-ACC, I want to touch on is Temple. I famously predicted last week that BC was going to have a tough time with Temple. They lost to Nova, so disregard.
That's tough. Yeah, that's really that was a tough scoreline to see. But by the way, you weren't on your own either, saying that was going to be like a trap game for a potential slip up game.
They hate exactly.
They really do. So that was nice to just put them again back in their place.
Also, to be fair, speaking of Daz, remember Daz's first game back in 2013 against Nova? We were down at halftime to them. They had that fake punt. Remember that?
Were we down at halftime? I remember the fake punt. Yeah. Were we down at halftime?
I think we ended up winning by three scores.
Yeah, it was comfortable.
It was like 10-7 at halftime or something like that. So.
Yeah. And then the only other two that I will mention, and then I will bring, I don't know what the official term is. If we have any law scholars out there, they can correct us. But I'm basically going to bring all of the ACC into the courtroom at once. Spoiler alert. But so Cuse gave up 9.7 yards per play. That's actually a bad number. You don't like to give up almost a first down on every single play.
Offense looked good, though. Offense was electric.
Offense did look good, but they might give up 100 points to anyone in the ACC. And NC State, again, struggled with JMU, which I feel like JMU is normally one of the better FCS teams, but it's still an FCS team. So overall, unimpressive.
They're champs, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they might be. But does that mean anything? Like, I don't
no,
know what
it,
that...
it doesn't. No.
Right.
Good point.
So overall, I'm going to bring all of the ACC, except for Clemson, and maybe except for VaTech, into the courtroom as, what, I guess, co-defendants, kind of like a mafia trial, and I'm charging all of them with being really bad, and I think they're guilty in my book.
I only disagree with you in that it's week one, and, you know, a team, especially like Louisville, is going to get way better, right? They have a Jawan Pass, who is a good recruit, and he's a good football player. They have some stuff to work out, obviously, but anyone would look bad in their first college start against a team like Bama. Couple things. I mean,
Hang on. His last name is Pass?
Yeah.
Did
you not watch the game yet? Yeah.
That was that on Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday night.
No, we were watching the Michigan-Notre Dame. That was on where we were.
Yeah, you flip back and forth, though. Do you have a remote control?
It was at a bar. I can't ask them to just flip back and forth every couple
of minutes. Did they only have one television?
They had a bunch, but they were all on Michigan and Notre Dame, so I don't know what to tell you.
Got it.
Good, though. He's a quarterback, and his name is Pass. That's
I wonder if they did that on purpose. Although Patrick Pass, I think, was a fullback, so didn't work out
he
for
was.
Him in the
a
same way.
Patriot.
And he couldn't really catch.
He couldn't catch nor pass, as far as we can see. So funny how that works.
All right, I think that just about covers everything we wanted to talk about.
Are we adjourned? You got to say we're adjourned.
Oh, yes. Did that come through on your end? I hit the gavel.
Yeah, I got it. Perfect.
We can work that in sound-wise.
Perfect.
Guilty. Everyone's guilty. All right, so let's talk Holy Cross real quick here, Matt. basically it's kind of another tune-up game. It's a practice. It's a glorified scrimmage. But I don't know. Why don't you kick it off? Do you have fun facts?
I have fun facts. So we forgot the fun facts on UMass last week, which I apologize for because everyone knows that's the best part of the opponent preview. So I got two good fun facts here. So first is they were founded by the same guy who founded Boston College, Benedict Fenwick.
Yeah.
About 20 years later.
Yeah, how about that?
That's one of the more fun facts we've had, I'll be honest. I like that one.
And I couldn't get much intel on this. Why did we name a dormitory after Fenwick?
Well, he still founded BC. Like, it's not like, I don't think it was like on terrible terms that he left BC. Like, he still was the founder.
That he just founded another school?
Yeah. He just, I don't know. He was imperialistic. He wanted a bunch of schools, I guess.
Who did he found first?
BC, like 20 years before.
Okay.
I think he was also the president at Georgetown at some point, too. So he's kind of dipped his toes in all the Jesuit waters, so to speak. Just kind of a little bit like Monopoly, but with Catholic colleges. So that's my first fun fact. Second one, a little bit of a shout out to me. Math majors is their fourth most popular major at Holy Cross.
Matt, why don't you retroactively transfer there?
Thanks, Matt. What do you got?
All right. So Holy Cross has had an absolutely electric run of recent concerts. They have a spring weekend every year, much like BC does. And they've had a pretty solid lineup recently. In 2016, they had JoJo and Third Eye Blind. Which, honestly...
Oh, JoJo's she's a Foxborough gal, isn't she?
If I could drum up one concert, it would probably be that one. In 2017, they had Time Flies opening for T-Pain. So, that is a little less impressive. T-Pain hasn't done much recently. And then, we'll go back to 2006. They had Phantom Planet.
Is that the OC soundtrack?
Yeah, the OC, exactly. Okay. Maybe we can feed that sound in too.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. So those are my fun facts. Next on the list here, we do the notable alumni starting five plus six man. Matt, what do you got?
Yeah, so I'll start it off. I will go with Bill Simmons. I think he's by far their biggest name and their most famous alumni, Boston sports guy. Really great writer. I don't love him on camera. His show on HBO didn't really work out that well. And now that he's getting old, he seems a little bit more out of touch with like millennials. He kind of has a little old man yelling at cloud thing going on. But we'll still need to give him his recognition as one of the best, if not the best sports writer of kind of our generation. So and by far, I would say the most famous Holy Cross alumni.
Yeah, I mean, he invented kind of blogging from the fans' perspective. So I don't want to say he indirectly inspired us for this podcast, but
he hates BC, by the way.
Yeah, I remember he had a quote about the marathon, and it was like someone asked him, "Hey, Bill, like, where's the best place to go watch the Boston Marathon?" And he goes, "Avoid Cleveland Circle because it's full of drunk kids that are bemoaning the fact that they didn't get into BC." So,
by the way,
he says stuff like that all the time.
No, other way around. He claims that they're all drunk bemoaning the fact they didn't get into Holy Cross, which is like ridiculous.
That's what I meant.
You said BC, yeah, and it's ridiculous. And I'm pretty sure he's on the record as saying he was rejected from BC, which is why he hates us.
Exactly.
So much.
Yeah, that was my point.
Go figure.
You got it. All right. So from one hated journalist to another, I'll throw Dan Shaughnessy in the mix here.
Got to do
spot. He is, I guess I'd call him the original hot take machine. Whatever everyone else is thinking, he says the opposite just to get some page views. And from a BC standpoint, it seems like once every couple of years, his one Boston College related contribution is to write about how no one cares about BC or no one cares about college football in the Northeast, rather than using that time to sort of drum up interest in the sport or try to get anyone excited. You talked about the AJ Dillon story. There's all sorts of things you could do as a sports writer if you wanted to. You could talk about the local talent, the EJ Perry's Andover guy, Lucas Dennis from Everett, right? So instead of doing that, he just says, these are all the reasons why BC sucks and no one cares about football and this is Pat's town and all that. So,
but that's the job of being a journalist in Boston. When our teams win everything all the time, they need to like make up fake controversies. So they blame Belichick for stuff. They get into all the Deflategate conspiracies, whatever. One anecdote about Dan Shaughnessy. So the Boston Globe's new headquarters is in the same office building in Boston as where my company is. So I've been in an elevator with him before. He is, without a shadow of a doubt, I won't necessarily say ugliest, but just most disheveled and least put together human being you'll ever see. He brings the whole caricature of this old school sports writer who's just out of touch with everything to an entirely new level. Just a disgusting human being and matches the you know, the personality perfectly. It was it Carl Everett, I think, who named him the curly haired boyfriend.
Yes.
I think that's just about sums it up there.
Yeah, he's HD television has not done him any favors. And I actually like Bob Ryan. He's like a really
BC
bad
guy.
Version of Bob Ryan. Yeah, exactly. Bob Ryan's pretty pessimistic, but you know, Shaughnessy wears it on his sleeve and does it, you know, to be ironic and all that. So he's the worst type of human. All right, so my next one is going to be obviously Neil Fingleton.
Obviously.
That,
what was I
that
thinking?
Was on your list. he is the tallest man in the history of the United Kingdom. He played basketball. He was 7'8". I mean, he was huge. He played one season at UNC, which is really, I think, one or two games at most. He had all sorts of injuries.
UNC Chapel Hill?
Yeah, oh yeah, he played.
Okay.
Yeah,
good for him.
Yeah, I saw about one highlight. That was about all she wrote. He was 7'8", man. He had a lot of problems injury wise.
That's sad. I don't want to joke because he's probably dead now.
So, more to come on that in a second here, Matt. He transferred to Holy Cross after a year at UNC. I don't think he saw maybe 5 minutes a game. I think he averaged 1.7. I'm looking at 1.7 points, which is not a lot if you're 7'8".
In the Patriot League, especially, you got to be getting at least like 5 points a game at that height.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So, Matt, you'll appreciate this. He is dead now. Spoiler alert.
Why would I appreciate that?
No, that's not what you'll appreciate. You'll appreciate this. I'm not a Game of Thrones guy, but you are. I don't know what season you're on. He played Mag the Mighty in Game of Thrones. Do you know who that is?
I don't, but I... Oh, so this is like a recent death.
Yeah, he died a couple years ago.
Okay.
Really sad. But he was an actor, and he played... He only played tall people, I would presume. But Mag the Mighty, who I don't know who it is, but I'm sure our listeners do, or Thronies, that you guys call it. I don't know. So he was an actor before he died, but after basketball. So
that's a heck of a resume right there. I'll be honest, that's a tough act for me to follow with the number four pick, but I'm going to go keep it on the hardwood and go with Bob Cousy. So Celtic great, but more importantly, a former BC basketball head coach. So that was in the, I want to say... I'm not even going to throw a decade out, but maybe like the 80s?
I was going to say 50s. So
I was going to say that originally, but that felt way too early because I feel like he was playing around that time.
No, he played like way back in the day, Matt.
All right, well, maybe the 60s he was the head coach. Whatever, we can figure that out. But yeah, BC head coach. So 2 weeks in a row, we had Al Skinner last week on the UMass train and now Bob Cousy on the BC train. So that's my number four pick. Number five, it's a negative pick. Like he's not a good well-recognized person, but Ted Wells, who we of course know better as the con man who was in charge of the Deflategate investigation, is a Holy Cross graduate. So that's a real black mark in my eyes against them. Obviously it doesn't go well with Shaughnessy. Maybe they were in cahoots a little bit because they're, you know, both clearly anti-patriot. So Ted Wells, just a terrible human being and again, a really bad representative of the Jesuit education.
That's a deep one, Matt. Good work there. He's the worst human on the planet, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
All right, I'm deciding between a couple here. You missed Tommy Heinsohn. I can't believe you're going
to
bring up a
but
Celtic.
But I didn't want to do Cousy. You know, I didn't want to just do two Celtics. That would have been too easy.
Okay. Well, I'll go with J.D. Power, who I think is a pretty, you know, pretty nice alum to have. J.D. Power is the authority on all things reviews of any kind, I think. Mostly cars, right? J.D. Power and Associates. You know,
I think cars is his. I think yeah. Now I did not know it at first when you just said J.D. Power, but now that you say it,
J.D.
I think
Power
cars,
and Associates.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
so
oh,
I knew his associates.
We rated
I guess better than him.
Fifth on the J.D. Power rankings.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's not bad.
So he dropped a nice $3 million donation earlier this year.
He's still alive. I would have thought he was like 1800s type stuff.
I'm sure he's got to be like 97. But
yeah, that seems like something they've been giving that award out for 200 years type thing.
He's still donating. He's still active, and he's still giving out rankings. So I think that's a pretty good get for Holy Cross. And that's about it, Matt, frankly.
It was a bad list.
It was a really, really bad list.
Although, Matt, you missed – there was one that we did not mention. They had another astronaut. It's incredible.
For those of you that have just tuned in for the first time this episode, my co-host is absolutely obsessed with BC football opponents' astronauts.
No, I'm not obsessed at all. It's just a matter of fact that when we do this for every other school, they always have an astronaut section. Every single school, every ACC school, Virginia Tech has like 10. UMass had one. Holy Cross has one. We don't have any astronauts. I just feel like that's a niche that we're missing. So I don't know what we have to do to work on it. I know we're developing a new physics center. Maybe that will get us in the right direction.
A couple other honorable mentions here. Tommy Heinsohn, which we mentioned, is obviously the voice of the Celtics for all of our childhoods, giving out Tommy points, complaining about the refs. He's an absolute beauty. And then John Favreau, Matt. but not the famous one.
Yeah.
So that tricked me.
He hosts, I knew you were going to get tricked when you saw the name, but he hosts a great podcast now.
I probably wouldn't like it. He's an Obama guy, right?
Yeah, but you don't know what politics you like, so I think that's okay. we don't have to get into that now.
Okay, all right. He used to be an Obama speechwriter, which is cool, I guess. But not the Jon Favreau, the director slash actor slash Swingers and
Elf.
Vince Vaughn's buddy and Elf, I guess, is the big one. And,
I don't know. Is that the big one?
Yeah, I think Elf is kind of the... Yeah, I think he's got
an Iron Man. Iron Man.
Yes, depends where you rank Elf and Iron Man. So.
Good point. That's for another episode. All right. So with that, I think we should get into. I think it's time to get into a little football. Does that sound good?
Let's talk like 3 minutes of football.
Yeah. So the only thing that I think is noteworthy about this game is that it is a rivalry and an old school rivalry at that.
Well, wait a second. Are you not doing the tailgate ability rankings, Matt?
Yeah. Well, I was going to do that after this, just because that's how I happen to order my notes. But I guess we can do it however we want.
Okay. Matt, you're the boss. Do it.
All right. Well, no, I mean, I'll do tailgate ability. So as we will mention in the next section, they are a terrible opponent, but it is a rivalry. There's a slight bump, but that's only really for the older historical factor, not our generation. So that bump is kind of neutralized. We are fun to watch, though. That does help our score. It is still early season football. We are undefeated. And it's great weather. It's 70 and sunny. So as you know, with us, that is always kind of the number one thing I look for. With all of that said, this is really only a thing because of the fact that we're actually fun to watch and a good team and we deserve support. So I'll get a 15.2. Again, out of 30 Bud Lights. In years past, this would probably get maybe a 7. But 15.2 because we're doing well and it's still early and nice weather.
Wow. I got 13.3. And I thought that was going to be high. I thought you were going to put in like the 8 range. So I was ready to justify my ranking.
I could have gone lower.
Yeah, I mean, this is just like Howard 2.0, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, but they get the historical factor. That's the only reason. That's the only reason it gets something.
I guess so. I mean, so
and we stunk. And we stunk when we played Howard. We weren't a good team then.
We still beat him by 76. I guess the one of the big or two big positives. AJ Dillon, I think, will have a huge game. I think he'll, you know, if we give him five touches, he'll probably have 5 touchdowns and 300 yards. Would be my guess. The weather you mentioned, I figured you would cover the weather.
Yep.
It's an auto win, which is always good. And you also get an extended post game if you're, you know, kind of sneaky about it.
That's a good point.
So everyone's gonna leave at halftime and an extended day and nice weather on Brighton. So that's the tailgate ability rankings. I got a couple things on the football side, Matt. You mentioned the rivalry. Everyone knows if you know anything about football, 1942, right? BC is undefeated. They're number one in the country. All they have to do is beat Holy Cross in the last game of the year. They get blown out at Fenway Park by a score of 55-12. But that turned out to be a good thing, didn't it, Matt? Do you know why?
It sure did. Yep, it sure did.
Do you know, or do I need to
say? Yeah, of course I know why. I told you last episode. I read the book on the history of the program. Plus, I just am a big Wikipedia guy. Like, I read history articles all day. So, yeah, I know why. Do you want to give it away?
Is it the Coconut Grove thing?
It is, Matt. It is.
Yeah, why don't you take it?
Yeah, so the Coconut Grove. So BC had scheduled their celebration party for having an undefeated regular season. And I forget where the national championship was going to be that year, but basically their national championship selection. They rented out this big nightclub in the south end of Boston. And sure enough, after they lost, nobody showed up. So it just became a general admission night at the club. 492 people were in that night, or maybe more. But anyways, fire catches one of the tiki themes in the club. Thing completely catches on fire and 492 people ultimately die. So that would have been basically our entire football team. We did, I think there was, I believe the only BC casualty, or at least BC football related casualty, was there was a team manager who went sadly with his girlfriend, who showed up anyways because he didn't know it was canceled. And they got there and they said, oh yeah, just a heads up, you know, the team canceled the party. And he said, you know, maybe a couple of the guys will show up anyways, so let's stick around and have a fun night. And sadly, he did not make it out. But I think he was the only BC football-related death there. But still, 492. Terrible. It's the worst fire in Boston history.
Yeah, I was in the 40s, though, so I think we can... I wasn't going to say laugh about it.
May they rest in peace.
Okay, perfect. All right, so back to football here. So I guess on that point, this is a rivalry, I guess, for all
the
people.
It's a rivalry in name only.
Yeah, and I don't know, obviously Holy Cross is an FCS program. They're coming off a pair of 4-7 seasons. They have a new coach who's kind of restarting the rebuilding process here. But they, even, you know, from last year, they lost a ton of talent. They had a really good quarterback who I think actually got a tryout with the Vikings, which I don't think you see every day with Holy Cross. And they kept within a touchdown of UConn last year. So if we're playing last year's team, we probably only beat them by 50. But they lost everyone from last year in new coach and rebuilding. That probably equals 70 plus. You know, it'll be interesting to watch over the next few years, though. I mean, they're starting to schedule legit FBS schools more often. They have Syracuse and Navy next year, and then obviously us again in 2020. So they should rebuild in a hurry, I guess. But I'll just jump straight into my score here, Matt. I have us at 68-9. And let's just get the backups in there, the second and third units, get them some experience, and get ready for Wake next Thursday.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, this is not a good Holy Cross team by any measure. They're 0-1 with a loss to Mighty Colgate on the road in week one, which is a tough team to lose to. I think that they could be a worse team than Howard. If you look at someone like the S&P ratings, they're very bad. And obviously, we're much better than the year that we played Howard. I think that we could easily go out and score 200 points and go running clock. But similar to last week, we will just go up huge in the first half and basically shut it down, go full backups the rest of the way, even though our backups then could still put up, you know, 60 points on their own. But whatever. I'm officially going 59-6, a little lower than you, but relatively in the same thing. I don't see any way in which they score, you know, more than a couple field goals or get in the end zone or anything like that. And again, I think we'll pretty much score at will. Same as last week, let's pad the stats a little bit and we'll just get everyone out healthy, get some good reps in. And we have a short week coming up on Wake Forest, so that's the number one thing. If we can keep everyone fresh and ready to go into, you know, really when our season starts the following Thursday.
And just for everyone out there, this does get more football intensive as we start to play legit opponents. So
that's
here for the football,
sure.
And we're disappointed. Just that's coming. We got to provide some side commentary while we are playing the UMass and Holy Cross of the world. But
of course, and as always, keep following us at Twitter at Fourth and Dude. We're on Instagram as well. I think at Fourth and Dude. We got to probably do a little more out of that account. But the tweets are good. We tried to tweet a lot during the game day. I know our volume got a little high on Twitter during the UMass game, but we toned it down as the starters pulled out as well, just to kind of keep us fresh for the remaining season as well. So yeah, give us a follow over there. A lot more fun, similar to these podcasts, if you guys find them fun.
All right. I think with that, that wraps up week two, and looking forward to the rest of the year and continuing the undefeated streak. Any closing words, Matt?
Road to 15-0 is still a full go.
Absolutely. It's always a great day to be a dude.
Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.